Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. We got a packed program as usual. At the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with writer-journalist Sandra Cobrin. Sandra's the co-author with Gloria Killian of a fascinating new book called Full Circle. Now, this book is going to make you angry and hopefully give you more insight into and a lot more understanding of how the so-called criminal justice system works in this society. Full Circle tells a story that begins with a simple robbery, moves into a massive frame-up and conviction of a completely innocent woman who is then sentenced to 32 years to life in the California prison system. Now, Gloria Killian, the woman who got sentenced and the co-author of the book with Sandra Cobrin, eventually did 18 years of that sentence before she was able to fight her way out. And all this happened even though many of the officials involved knew damn right well that Gloria Killian was innocent. So this is a segment you're not going to want to miss. You want to stick around for this one. But before that, you're going to get a chance to hear some really unusual stuff, okay? And that is, you're going to listen to the Large Hadron Collider rap. Now, this is very important. This is a very important section of the show, and it's an enlightening section of the show because it fills you in, really gives you a good idea of just what the hell they're doing up there at the Large Hadron Collider. And this is very important because our first guest opening the show up. But to open the show up, you know, we've talked about the Large Hadron Collider and the search for the Higgs boson a number of times on the show. And I'm really happy to be coming to you with the news, as you all know already, the news that there's been a huge development in the search for the Higgs boson. July 4th was a momentous day in the history of science and in the history of humanity. Scientists at the Large Hadron Collider and other places, thousands of them working cooperatively, discovered the existence of the Higgs boson. Beakers were clinking all over the world as we took a very significant step forward in our understanding of the universe. Joining us to talk about this today is Dr. Don Lincoln, a senior scientist at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, whose primary research interest is the search for subatomic particles smaller than quarks. Dr. Lincoln has co-authored hundreds of scientific papers and lectured in North America, Europe, and Asia, and is a strong proponent of bringing the physics frontier to a lay audience, something that I personally think is extremely important. He is also the author of Understanding the Universe from Quarks to the Cosmos and The Quantum Frontier, The Large Hadron Collider. Dr. Don, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Let me jump into this. The first question I have, I just read this, a little snapshot of what was actually accomplished on July 4th, and actually all through 40 or 50 years before that. Scientists have spent 40 or 50 years wrestling with the concept of and searching for the Higgs boson. Why? Why is it so significant?
Well, the reason is, there's actually a lot of answers to that, but back in the 1960s, scientists were trying to understand how to unify forces that seem different. And we have examples of this in the past, like the gravity that holds us on the ground. It turns out to be the same gravity that causes the seasons and makes the stars move in the sky. And that doesn't sound so insightful now, but several hundred years ago, it was Isaac Newton who unified these two very seemingly different things and showed that they really were one thing, and that was gravity. Similarly, in the 1960s, scientists were trying to unify electromagnetism, which causes, of course, electricity, magnetism, light, and all of chemistry, as well as the weak nuclear force, which causes some kind of radioactivity. It was possible to do that. That turns out to be incredibly hard to do. Some very brilliant people did that, but they were able to do it. But there was only one little hitch. They could do it if particles had zero mass. Now, we know that was false, and so many people came up with some ideas that suggested they could add something to the theory that gave particles the mass. And the person whose name is associated that with is Peter Higgs, which is why we call the mechanism the Higgs field and the Higgs boson. And so if we were unable to find the Higgs boson, we would not be able to prove this theory, and then it would throw into question this whole unification idea. And since it worked brilliantly, we were just sort of sure that it was there, but there was no guarantees. And last week's results gave us a lot of comfort that we were on the right track.
So it gave you a lot of comfort about being on the right track. So does this mean that the Higgs boson has not actually been found yet?
Well, we have to be extremely careful about what we found. And there's a degree to which some of the reporters were a little less careful than they might have been. what we found was we have the theory that we have of particle physics we call the standard model, and the standard model includes this prediction of the Higgs boson. But it's possible to make a version of the standard model where you simply take the Higgs boson away. So you might call that the standard model light. And so if you compared standard model light to our measurements, we proved last week that that fails. It's wrong. You need something more. Now, it turns out that the data we found is consistent with the Higgs boson, but it turns out it's also consistent with several cousin theories as well, competitor theories. So what we've proven is we need something more. And this isn't surprising. The amount of data that we need to prove that this is the Higgs boson and not a cousin particle was expected to take through all of 2012. And what we were able to do was we proved that we found something, and that something looks and smells like the Higgs boson. But until we see it with all of our senses, until we taste it and touch it and hear it, we're not certain that it's exactly the Higgs boson. We know we found something, and we're not 100% sure what. However, it could very well be the Higgs boson.
Okay. Now, again, the significance, if you have found it, what would you say is the most significant thing about finding it?
You know, this has been a story that has plagued mankind for thousands of years. We've been trying to study and understand the beginnings of the universe, the building blocks of the universe, and this is a huge step forward in our understanding of how the universe is put together. It gives us confidence that we really are beginning to understand how the universe behaved after the Big Bang. I mean, this is really an important addition. It's a sort of new way of matter to interact with one another, something that's different than anything that we'd ever proven to be true before.
Now, for those of us who aren't familiar with all the technical aspects of this, you kept referring to the standard model. What exactly is the standard model?
Well, the standard model is just a bit of jargon. It means all of the theories that we've put together over the past 100 years explaining how matter works at the subatomic level. So there, part of it is electromagnetism, which is how the atoms are held together. Part of that is what we call the strong nuclear force that holds the protons and neutrons in the center of the atoms and governs how they work. And then there's this thing called the weak force, which governs some types of radioactivity. So you take the theories for those three forces, electromagnetism, strong and weak nuclear force, and you put them together, and it's called the standard model. The standard model says that there are two kinds of particles, and they have really kind of bizarre names. One is called quarks, and quarks you find in the nucleus of atoms. And another thing is called leptons, of which the most familiar is an electron. So if you take the quarks, the leptons, and those forces I described, the standard model tells you how to stitch them all together to form the universe. The one thing that's not in the standard model is gravity. Gravity is a separate theory, and we don't yet know how to weave gravity together in the subatomic realm.
Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate, and I'm talking today with Dr. Don Lincoln. Dr. Lincoln is a senior scientist at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, a writer and lecturer, and a popularizer of physics, and he's talking with us today about a big advance in the search for the Higgs boson, which is a big step in trying to get a much better understanding, to take a huge leap in our understanding of the universe and how it functions. Now, Don, tell me this. You talked about the standard model, and I realize that there's also a question here of, you know, one thing that people keep saying about the Higgs boson is that it'll help explain how particles gain matter. I wasn't really even aware that that was a huge question, to be truthful, but, you know, why is that such an important question, and what the hell does it mean?
Well, there are, of course, people who will not be curious about questions about why things like electrons have mass. But for those of us who study that sort of thing, one thing that is true is if electrons did not have mass, atoms wouldn't form, and you and I wouldn't exist. So for those people who are curious, which, you know, many scientists and for that matter an awful lot of people are, understanding why is it that we even exist is really a fundamental and curious question. And if the Higgs boson didn't exist, we wouldn't exist. So, you know, that you know, it's interesting for those people who want to understand sort of the deep underpinnings of why we're even here.
Well, that's a very important point, and I should make clear, I am actually very curious about this, just so you know. But it's not one of those things that, like, you know, sort of was striking me because I don't deal in particle physics all the time. But I'm curious about this. He said, if this didn't exist, we wouldn't exist. Why?
Well, because if you look into quantum mechanics, which is a sort of 1920s kind of theory, you can work out the behavior and the structure of the atoms that hold us together. And a very important component of those theories is what is the mass of the electron. And if the electron doesn't have a mass, you can't form atoms. And of course, if you can't form atoms, you can't have chemistry. If you can't have chemistry, you don't have cells. If you don't have cells, we're not here. Nothing's here. Planets aren't here. Stars aren't here. Nothing is here.
All right. Now, let me dig into this a little bit more. The Guardian of London actually made a comment in their article. They said, fundamental science like this is thrilling, not least because of the way that years of hard work, experimentation, and mathematical analysis have led us to a worldview of astonishing simplicity and beauty. And then it goes on to talk about symmetry, that the universe is governed by symmetry, but there's a problem here. It says that the problem is that perfect symmetry would also imply that fundamental particles should be massless, and that's clearly nonsense, which seems to be in agreement with what you're saying. And then it says that the Higgs boson, actually the genius of Higgs and the other theorists who came up with the idea of the fabled boson, was to appreciate the importance of symmetry. They had to figure out a means by which the universe could simultaneously be both symmetric and contain massive particles, and the Higgs boson is the solution. Can you talk about that a little?
Sure. That goes back to what I was talking about earlier, back in the 1960s. The physicists at the time were able to show that these two fundamental forces, the force that causes some radioactivity, the weak force, and electromagnetism, were one and the same. But it was only true if they could make their theories symmetric, to use that term, and that meant that all of the particles that made that happen, and they have some names that are familiar and some that are not. There's the photon, which is the particle of light, which is massless, and that's fine. But then there's also the W and Z boson, which are they're from the weak force, and they're heavy. So in this simple theory, all of those particles have zero mass. And so about a half a dozen physicists came up with a method to add something to the theory that took these massless particles and, we say in physics term, broke the symmetry. So we made it so that things didn't look quite the same. And in doing so, gave mass to the particles of the weak force and made it weak, and didn't give a mass to the photon so that it's stronger, and that is why the universe acts the way it does. So it's true that symmetry is really important, but this Higgs mechanism, this Higgs boson, breaks the symmetry and makes the universe the familiar one we live in.
We are talking today with Dr. Don Lincoln, a senior scientist at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, and we're talking about the recent advance in the search for the Higgs boson and why it's so important for all of us to understand this. Now, Don, one thing here is, as I understand it, and I've had a couple people on the show before, as I understand it, the Higgs boson, aside from the fact that it was a theoretical proposal or whatever, as you know, something that no one had found, it was extremely difficult to even embark on the attempt to search for it. That it's not something that's just like you fill up a lot of things and you find it eventually. It's even harder than finding a needle in a haystack, given the fact that it's extremely rare that it actually appears, right? Or that the decay from one actually appears. I read somewhere what it was like, 1 in 10 billion collisions might produce the Higgs boson, and then it lasts for, like, you know, it's gone already.
Correct. So, yes, this is really an amazing thing. So everybody's heard about E equals MC squared, and, of course, very few people really understand what that means. But what it means is you can convert energy into matter and convert matter into energy. And so it's only recently, with very large particle accelerators, first the Tevatron, the Fermilab accelerator in Chicago, and then now, more recently, the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC, which is in Europe, have enough energy to make these particles. So what you have to do is you concentrate the energy in a tiny, tiny volume, and in concentrating the energy, you can make the Higgs boson. And then it does decay very quickly. So we don't see the Higgs boson. What we see are its daughter particles. And those ones we understand pretty well how to detect. So you're right. We never actually see the Higgs boson, but we see its daughters.
Well, now let's get back to what actually this is going to give rise to, because I keep thinking about this in terms of it being such a long and laborious process, and that it, you know, the whole thing that I've read before is like, okay, if you guys find this Higgs boson, then it's going to actually verify the standard model and everything that we understand thus far. And if you don't, then it's going to throw everything up for grabs again. And, you know, and it's not that simplistic, but essentially that's what I've been reading. And I had a question here about, even if this is the Higgs boson that you found and it could verify the standard model, couldn't it also open some very important aspects of the standard model, open that up to questioning and maybe opening doors to further development of the standard model?
Oh, absolutely. There are many questions. I don't want anyone to be left with the impression that this is some final piece of physics. There are an awful lot of things that we don't understand. Let me tell you some that are outside of the Higgs boson, but are no less interesting. For instance, astronomers look out deep into space, and using very simple physics, the physics that is taught in high school, you look at a galaxy, and you can calculate how fast that galaxy should rotate. And if it rotates too fast, then gravity can't hold it together and it should get ripped apart. So you look at how fast it's rotating, and you see how much mass is there because you can look at the light and see how much is in there, and you find out that there's no way these galaxies should exist. They should be torn totally apart. It appears that there is some kind of matter, some kind of mass holding those galaxies together that we can't see. And this is called dark matter. Now, that doesn't seem like it would have anything to do with the particle physics realm. After all, we're talking about galaxies, and the sort of physics I do studies things much smaller than atoms. But remember that E equals mc squared thing. We are trying right now in these accelerators to actually make dark matter in the laboratory so that the quantum realm, the subatomic realm, and the galactic, the cosmic realm, are actually two sides of the same coin. So that is one of the things that we're continuing to study. As far as the Higgs boson, and remember I told you that Peter Higgs and some of the theorists of his contemporaries, they added this to the existing theory. It's kind of like a Band-Aid. It's a patch on top of the theory. We don't really understand from deep fundamental principles, you know, sort of I think, therefore I am, and then I can work out an equation and come up with this physics. We don't really understand why the Higgs boson is. We just know that if it's there, then the rest of the theory works and we can explain a lot of things. But why it's there is still an open mystery.
Well, how about this? I mean, what are some of the things, in like, if you just let your imagination go wild, what are some of the things that, if this actually turns out to be the Higgs boson, what are some of the things that the pathways that might be opened up then? In your imagination, what you could conceive of, what you'd see as the best possible outcome of this, what do you think the direction that things might go in?
Well, if the Higgs boson exists as we think it, that we might have discovered it, there is one really difficult mystery. And the difficult mystery is we know that the forces can unify. We know that electricity and magnetism are really the same, even though they seem they're different. We know the two kinds of gravity that keeps us on the ground and the thing that makes the planets move is the same, even though it seems that it's different. And all of the forces, you know, if you look at how they behave, it looks like they could all possibly be different facets of the same thing. The problem is, from all of our studies, it looks like that they will all become the same thing at incredibly high energies, ridiculous energies, energies we'll never be able to generate in accelerators. And that's a real curiosity. We don't understand why that point where all these things come together should be at such incredibly high energies. So if the Higgs boson is true, then we don't, it really has a problem with this big difference in energies when they all seem to come together in what we're probbing now. So there's a new theory, well, I guess it's not that new, but it's a unproven theory called supersymmetry. And supersymmetry says that for every particle that we know of, there is a cousin particle, very similar to it, but with slightly different properties, that exists. And if it's true, then we will be able to hopefully find these in the accelerators. And so the existence of the Higgs boson leads us in the direction to think that maybe Supersymmetry is the next big discovery on the horizon, and it's something that we've been looking for a long time and thus far had no success. But now that the Higgs boson appears to perhaps have been discovered, that's clearly the thing that many people will turn their attention to.
All right. Let me remind listeners that you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. And I'm talking today with Dr. Don Lincoln, a senior scientist at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, and we're talking about the major step forward in finding the Higgs boson. And you're going to call us and let us know if you actually did turn out to find it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll give you my personal phone number as soon as we're done here. Two more questions, Don.
Sure.
One is that, as I said before, and as is obvious for a lot of, this has been a long and laborious process. But, and it's also generated a tremendous amount of contention. And you're a proponent of popularizing science, and which, I, as I mentioned, I think is extremely important. And I wanted to ask you a couple things. The first one would be, we also exist in a, and especially in this country, there's a tremendously strong anti-science current in the country right now. What do you think about that? What's it been like in terms of going up against that? Because there's been a lot of arguments from the most, you know, the most base arguments of like, well, it's spending too much money to find this thing that they don't even know exists. What do they want to spend this stuff around in circles? Plus, it's all the way over there in Europe, you know? And I mean, there's this whole thing of downplaying this, and you have to go up against this quite a bit. How's that impacting you?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's always a challenge to justify your existence, especially if you, you are using public funding to find things. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to point at the obvious benefits of fundamental science. Now, not everything that you look for in fundamental science turns out to be a marketable product. But in particle physics, we like to point to the success of something that was developed to in particle science. And it doesn't have to do with Higgs bosons. It doesn't have to do with quarks. It doesn't have to do with anything. It has to do with communication. For instance, scientists around the world wanted to be able to send their plots back and forth, send their data so they can understand and explain it to each other. And to do that, at the CERN laboratory, where the Higgs boson was invented, the World Wide Web was invented. That's where it was invented. And my laboratory in America was the second or third website in the world. So even though that this has nothing fundamentally to do with particle physics, the need to communicate was so strong that the web was invented. And I'm quite comfortable saying that the economic boon to the world from the World Wide Web has far paid for anything that particle physics will spend for the next 50 years. And that's just one spinoff. There's also fast electronics. There's strong magnets. The next time you play baseball and twist your knee sliding into home plate, you go get an MRI, the magnet that is checking your knee and making sure you walk well again is a spinoff of the kinds of equipment that we needed to design to do our research. So there's always spinoffs. Mm-hmm. I can't claim the Higgs boson is going to make flying cars, is what people often ask me, and no, that's not going to happen. But I am 100% certain that the benefit to society has well been paid off.
Now, do people really ask you if it's going to make flying cars?
I hate to say it, but a radio show who will remain nameless did in fact ask me if I was going to, Higgs boson would make cars fly, and I had to tell them no, I was pretty sure it wouldn't.
Good for you, and whoa, what a scene we're in. Well, you know, that's what I was going to ask you, is because it's the impact that you're talking about in terms of what you've seen and all, but it's also, what about the impact on the process, on the idea? I mean, I imagine you're up against, it's a very exciting endeavor. And at the same time, you're up against, it's a very hard work. And there's no possibility that you'd know for certain that you're going in the right direction. And then you're faced with all these attempts to even shut down the labs. I mean, it seems like, the kind of public opinion that's out there is not always that supportive, especially in this country, is not that supportive of development of science or science that doesn't have a military purpose or doesn't have, you can't turn to somebody and say, look, microwaves, okay? And then everybody's, oh, yeah. And then it's among the people, it's one thing, but among the people who actually are pulling the strings and have the power, the idea that this is this really where they want to go? What kind of impact has this atmosphere had on the following through on the whole process?
Well, I mean, it's clear that the economy, the state of the economy has had a negative impact on fundamental science. And it's fair that we need to justify our existence. I mean, there's no reason to expect we should get money just to get money. But when we point to things like MRI magnets or radiation treatment for cancer, when we point to these things, I mean, these are things that people can understand. They may not be as interested in some of the nitty-gritty details of the research that we're performing, but we can certainly point to the spinoffs, and that usually gives a receptive audience.
Mm-hmm. One last question, and that is, and it's related to these questions I've been asking you, but the idea, too, that, again, being a science popularizer, you know, this idea that you search for something, that you try to go where no one has gone before, right? You got that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the idea that you're actually the beauty. I mean, there's something beautiful and poetic about really striving to understand the universe. And to me, it would seem like that alone is reason enough. We should live in a world, I think, where we're all filled with, you know, eagerness to learn about, even if we don't have the best grasp of the particular science, that we know that there are people out there who are actually searching to understand how is this universe working and what does it mean for what's beyond the universe and what does it mean about from us, the smallest molecules we are, to the whole universe and beyond that. You know, to me, that seems like that must be something that really compels a lot of you guys, a lot of the scientists that are working on this. You have to be compelled by something more visionary than, you know, even all the good things that you were talking about.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I would have to say that most fundamental scientists have, you know, for the lack of a better word, a sort of religious vision of what we do. We really want to understand. People have wanted to understand how the universe came into existence, what holds it together, what are the rules, what's its future, for as long as people have written things down. Now, there are various ways to come at that, but the scientific way, we are able to measure and quantify and show that we understand truly how the universe came into existence, and that is magical. And I try to convey that sense of wonder when I write, when I speak, and there is a good-sized chunk of the population that resonates with. Not everybody, but many.
All right, Don, one last question. Where to now?
Scientifically?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, we have this is one of the nifty things about the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider. It has 6,000 scientists working on it in two large experiments from the entire world. That means there are thousands of people searching for all sorts of new things. This idea of dark matter is something that we might really be able to find. We might prove in our laboratories what it is that holds the entire universe together, which kind of blows my mind. People talk about trying to write down the theory of the universe on a T-shirt, and that's clearly a goal. We're working towards trying to understand everything in a simple, cohesive, tiny way, and you know, this is going to take a long time, but we've taken a step in that direction, and we're going to take more.
So you're going to be tied up for the next few years, I guess, huh?
Oh, forever. This is blast. I can't imagine doing anything but.
Great. All right, Don, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, take care. We'll be back to talk with you again when you find the real thing. Take care now, man. You've been listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. And we've been talking with Dr. Don Lincoln, a senior scientist at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, whose primary research interest is the search for subatomic particles smaller than quarks. And Dr. Lincoln has co-authored hundreds of scientific papers, lectured all over the world, and he's the author of Understanding the Universe from Quarks to the Cosmos and The Quantum Frontier, The Large Hadron Collider. We're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned.
Well, good evening, my dear students, and of course, friends of science and those of the higher order. You're going to see me tonight as you have never seen me before. What we have here is just like something you may have at home, like your video recorders. Except it records impulses from brain waves. This can take from the section of the brain that gives talent, can actually take that talent and put it into the brain of another person. In fact, I'll show you how it works. You just put your head inside of this little tube right here. Oh, yes, it doesn't hurt, so just put your head in there. Yes, as a matter of fact. Okay, here we go. He'll be okay. Chopley, give him these pills. Put that in his pocket. Let's take him away.
All right, that's a little piece called Friends of Science from Galactic and their album Yakame. You know, I often used to joke that in a lot of these science laboratories, I think that might be what it sounds like, and it used to worry me a tremendous amount. But I'm here to tell you that I found something that's even more impressive than that little musical interlude. And here's a rap done by the scientists at the Large Hadron Collider. And it's a rap done to explain just what the hell they were doing. Check this out. I don't think you've ever heard anything like this.
Oh, yeah. I'm about to drop some particle physics in the club. The LHC is super duper fly. Check it.
27 kilometers tunnel underground, designed with mind to send photons around. A circle that crosses through Switzerland and France. 60 nations contribute to scientific advance. Two beams of protons swing round through the ring they ride, tilling the hearts of the detectors that made it collide. And all that energy packed in such a tiny bit of room becomes mass particles created from the vacuum. And then,
oh yeah.
LHCBs is where the antimatter's gone. Alice books at collisions of lead ions. Sam is an atlas, a two of a kind. They're looking for whatever new particles they can find. The LHC accelerates the photons in the lead, and the things that it discovers will rock you in the head. We see asteroids and planets, stars galore. We know a black hole resides in each galaxy's core. But even all that matter cannot explain what holds all these stars together. Something else remains. The star matter interacts only through gravity. And until you catch a particle, there's no way to see. Of energy and the particles appear clear as can be. You see particles flying in jets they spray, but you notice there ain't nothing going the other way. You say my law has just been violated. That don't make sense. There's gotta be another particle to make this balance, and it might be dark matter. And for the first time, we catch a glimpse of what we saw most of the known verse because. Extends, which makes it seem weaker here on our wreck.
All right, that was the Large Hadron Wrap. What do you think of that? Boy, tell me that didn't, whew. All right, now remember, these are the people that are looking for how the universe began. These are the people that are doing all that stuff up in the Large Hadron Collider. And you know what? I'm glad they got it in them to do that, and I'm glad they got it in them to do the Large Hadron Wrap, because it helps everybody understand things, and it's kind of cool that they can both search for all this stuff for the Higgs boson and still come up with the Large Hadron Wrap. You want to check out the video with that? Go to YouTube or just go to just Google Large Hadron Wrap. That's H-A-D-R-O-N, okay? Large Hadron Wrap. You'll find it. You'll see the video, and you'll enjoy it, all right? Okay, I'm really pleased to welcome my next guest to the show. Her name is Sandra Cobrin. Sandra is the co-author of a book called Full Circle, A True Story of Murder, Lies, and Vindication, and she wrote the book with Gloria Killian, who the book is about. And Sandra will tell us in a minute what Gloria's story is. But I have to tell you, I came to know about this book, and I was encouraged to do this interview by a friend of mine who has spent her life really, she's a playwright and a filmmaker, a writer, and she spent her life really going out and finding these, you know, these instances of immense injustice and really, really wanting to get out and stand up against it and really supportive of people who are standing up against this. And she recommended Sandra and the book Full Circle to me. And on that note, I got the book, read it, and really agreed with her. So I wanted to make that point. And Sandra is a journalist, columnist, screenwriter, and television producer who began her career as the youngest sports writer at the New York Times. And her investigative stories have appeared in the Los Angeles Times and numerous other publications. She writes a nationally syndicated column for womensnews.org, and she teaches creative nonfiction at UCLA. Sandra Cobrin lives in Los Angeles. Sandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate it.
Sure. Well, the book, I have to tell you, I read it, and I'm usually a slow reader. I usually like to just, like, you know, it's not because I'm counting the words or anything, but it's because I really like to just let it sink in. And this book, I picked it up, I read it, and I read it in, like, you know, maybe 10, 12 hours, because it was, I couldn't put it down. And I found I was just really captured by the book. And I wanted you to tell people sort of briefly what the book is about.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the compliment. The book is the story of it's a story of Gloria Killian, but it's more than the story of Gloria Killian. It's the story of injustices and wrongful conviction in the state of California. Gloria Killian was a third-year law student who was arrested for being the mastermind of a murder and sentenced 32 years to life. What was so amazing about it, Gloria was never accused of being part of the murder. She was never accused of being involved in any way, but two guys went in and killed a coin collector and put a bullet through his wife's head. And once they were caught, they gave her name to protect their own friends. And a prosecutor who was very tough on crime decided, without any evidence other than the word of a criminal, that she was the mastermind of this robbery. She was sentenced 32 years to life. And then what's so incredible about her story, after she was in prison for 10 years, lawyers for another one of the people that she was arrested with, they found a letter from the guy who testified against her who said, "I lied my ass off and gave you Killian. Now where's my deal?" And $250,000, and 7 years later, she was finally released. And what's so amazing about this is 26 years after the crime and 5 years after she was released, her prosecutor, Kit Cleland, was brought up in the California bar for prosecutorial misconduct and moral turpitude on her case. And 26 years later, he was censured.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so amazing, by the way, is this prosecutor who was censured has since sent people to death row.
Mm. Wow. We'll talk about that in a minute. Wow. Well, tell me, what compelled you? This is, you know, given what I was reading about what you've written and all, this seemed to be a little bit different than all that. What compelled you? What drew you to this book and to Gloria's story?
Well, one of the most interesting things that I found about Gloria's story, because I write a lot of things about women and I'm very strong against injustice, but what Gloria did that was so amazing is she became, in prison, a jailhouse lawyer for battered women and abused women. And what she did is, in her time in prison, she became an activist. So it wasn't, to me, just a story of wrongful conviction, which unfortunately we see in California and across the country all the time. What was so compelling to me is how she became a lawyer for women in prison. If you've ever seen, like, The Shawshank Redemption, what's so amazing about Gloria is once in prison, she ran the law library, and she became a lawyer for the women in prison and for the guards and for the administration. What she accomplished in prison really compelled me. I mean, she's the first woman to get an article published in the USC Law Journal while still a prisoner.
Hmm. You know, one of the things that really got me, first let me remind listeners that you're tuned into The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we're talking today with Sandra Coburn, the co-author with Gloria Killian of the book Full Circle, A True Story of Murder, Lies, and Vindication. Now, Sandra, you know, one of the things that really struck me, as I was reading the book, it really struck me how much the story of women in prison is such a hidden story. You know, even in all the uprisings, all the other things, you don't really hear, you see schlocky movies that lead you nowhere near what it's really like. You know, you look at the conditions, and I thought that was one of the things you brought out very well, you and Gloria brought out very well in the book. The idea, the horror of the treatment of women in prison. What were some of the things that you saw, that Gloria saw, that drove her to actually start standing up for these women?
Well, one of the things that she was really aghast at is that women still, to this day, if they give birth in prison, they're shackled to the bed and chained to the bed while giving birth. The prison medical system, particularly for women, is absolutely horrendous. And, I mean, there are stories in the book where women would come to her with casts that would fall off their arm because their arms would be broken in 3 or 4 places. People were misdiagnosed. People were basically dying in the women were dying in the hallways. So in terms of the way female inmates were treated, was absolutely horrific, and no one really cared. And what Gloria did that was so amazing is she got involved with the Senate investigation, the California State Senate investigation, and she wrote letters. She also found out, and this was really fascinating to Gloria more than anyone else, is that so many of the women in prison are battered women, women that let's say abused or killed their abusers. So, some of these women who are rotting in our California state prisons are women who have never hurt anyone, or some of them have never even committed a crime, and now they're in jail in prison for 20 to 30 years because they killed a domestic partner that had raped or hurt them. So she brought what was so great about her story, and what she did is, because she was educated and because she was intelligent and because she didn't have any hope and she knew she was going to be in prison for so long, she worked tirelessly to bring these issues to light in the media. For example, to get clemency for the first battered woman in the state of California, she wrote over 6,000 letters. And prisoners don't have access to Xerox machines. So this is a woman with a bunch of other inmates who wrote over 6,000 letters to the media, to Governor Pete Wilson, to get clemency for the first battered woman in the state.
You know, one of the things that got me was that when you look at this and you think about this, I mean, even this, the battered women organizing that Gloria did, you know, it's interesting. I was telling my wife last night that I think there was a woman that was her name Suarez?
Maria Suarez. What a story. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think actually I may have either interviewed Gloria or someone, or maybe some of Maria, I think Maria's niece or something.
Patricia, I think, Valenzuela.
Yes. In fact, it was. She used to be a friend of mine. And when I first started doing radio, she was calling up and saying, look, you've got to talk to us. You've got to talk to us about this. And it really struck me when I was reading again. It really hit me very hard about what happened to Ms. Suarez. And then Gloria's role in actually bringing this out and the way that she actually dug into this and found this. But the other thing that really struck me around this was that, you know, there's certain arbitrariness, how arbitrary all this is in the justice system. Arbitrary on one level, but deadly calculated on another level. You know, and the arbitrariness of railroad and Gloria, but then you also see that it was very systematic that the system was working. Cleland, you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, it works to back up everything it does. There's sort of a, no matter what happens, we did it, so it must be right, and this is what we think, so this is what we need, so this is where you're going. How did that impact you?
I was horrified. I mean, I had written, it was funny because I came to Gloria from Maria Suarez. I had heard about Maria, and Maria was the one that introduced me to Gloria. And I was horrified. What I found out not only talking to people from the book, but talking to police and talking to district attorneys, once the police or the DA decide you're it, and they thoroughly believe that you perpetrated this crime, rather than look at other avenues, rather than really follow the evidence, what they do is they create a case to back up what they think happened. And the saddest thing I learned about this particular case is, if you don't have money to really amass a proper investigation and a proper defense in this country, you're in big trouble. Because the first time she was arrested twice, the first time she spent money on a top-notch lawyer, and her case was dismissed in 4 months. The second time, after she had spent her life savings on the first lawyer, she was appointed a public defender. And this public defender didn't have the resources for a proper investigation, to hire an investigator, to do everything that could have been done to get her off. And once the police decide you're it, they ignore other evidence. And so it happened in her case, and it's particularly frightening.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we're talking today with Sandra Cobrin, the co-author of the book Full Circle, A True Story of Murder, Lies, and Vindication, the story of Gloria Killian up against the criminal justice system in this country. You know, one of the things that happened in her case, too, though, is even if you do have the resources, and I appreciate what you're saying, but even if you do have the resources, for instance, you know, she got some resources when she met Ms. Ride, you know, mm-hmm. What's Judith Ride?
Joyce Ride, Sally Ride's mother.
Yeah, Joyce mm-hmm. Ride. So when she met Joyce Ride, she had resources available to her, but even then, the system kept plowing straight ahead. And that's, again, what I was thinking about is that, you know, it was scary and enraging because, you know, you think about this, that public defender that she had, that mm-hmm. public defender she first had, it wasn't just that he didn't have the resources. That was true. But he also wasn't actually as sharp as he needed to be in terms of the kinds of stuff. And you think about all of the kids today, particularly Black and Latino kids, who are going through the court system and being railroaded and shipped off into these prisons. So you have over 2 million people, more than half of them Black and Latino.
That's right.
Going into prison. This is an outrage.
It's so insane because you have these public defenders, number one, the crackerjack lawyers that are in it to make a ton of money. You don't get paid a lot of money as a public defender. Okay, so the cream, the really dedicated people go into it, or not the best lawyers, and the really dedicated, brilliant lawyers that go into it are bombarded with so many cases.
Yeah, exactly.
And it ends up, the police say it's you. The lawyers don't have the time, they don't have the staff. Sometimes they don't have the ability, and it's a ridiculous situation. California, the prison system is an $8 billion business. $8 billion a year is spent on prisons, prison guards. It's a huge business, and it's not working, and the jails are crowded with people that don't belong there.
You know, one of the things I think, too, though, is that even in terms of whether it's working or not, I mean, it's working in terms of what it's intended to do, which is outright suppression. There's nothing about, you know, rehabilitation involved with prison. You know?
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So in a sense, it does work. It does what the system wants it to do, which brings me to my next question. You know, for me, one of the things that got called into question very sharply is the whole character and nature of the legal system. You know, I read this book and I interviewed the author a little while ago called Convicting the Innocent. Mm-hmm. And it was he talked about how, In this legal system, especially the supposed unparalleled protection against convicting the innocent that the Constitution is supposed to guarantee isn't real.
And
it seems that most of our constitutional rights are focused on procedure rather than accuracy.
I'll give you in Gloria's case one of the things that finally got her out of prison. Not the fact that she was innocent, not the fact that this guy lied, but they interviewed her for 3 hours when she was first arrested, and after 3 hours, they said, "You're under arrest," and she said, "If I'm under arrest, I would like a lawyer." Her prosecutor at her trial said 8 times that Gloria Killian took the fifth, you know, refused to talk because she was holding something back. Now, that's a violation of her constitutional right to say that she, after 3 hours of talking, her asking for a lawyer was not. His saying that she had something to hide was a violation of her constitutional right. And that didn't matter that she was innocent. That technicality, that his abuse of power was what got her out of prison.
Yeah.
Which to me was amazing. It's like you were saying before, even though she was blatantly innocent, that the guy said he outright lied, it still took her 7 years to get out of prison. Because on the other side of the coin, the prosecutors and our justice system don't want to admit they made a mistake.
Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we're talking today with Sandra Coburn, the co-author with Gloria Killian of the book Full Circle, A True Story of Murder, Lies, and Vindication. Well, you know, it's interesting because part of it is it took her all that time before she found out, before this one investigator found it. And actually, it was even worse than that because it was a lawyer for one of the other defendants.
Because the reason that that happened, too, is because the guy was on death row, so he was given pro bono, top-notch pro bono appeals lawyers. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gotten anything. Because since he was facing death, they give you a pro bono law, a legal team, because you're at the death sentence. They would have never given her a legal team because she was just there for 32 to life. But since this man was sentenced to death, he got a crackerjack legal team, which in turn found Gloria.
Yeah, and found some pretty huge errors and some pretty
ridiculous
huge
errors.
Yeah. And it was very interesting to me too, though, because this thing of you know, and again, the idea that this happens over and over and over again. That's a thing, because even going after, you know, going after that mistake, going after that inaccuracy, going after that, you know, this blatant lie that was hidden, all the evidence that was hidden, all the things that were hidden from the court and from Gloria, even with that being said and being out in the open, the judge in her appeal actually said, "Oh, sorry, I'm not going to go with it.
It was an amazing blow when she got that first. You know, she was turned down again in the California Supreme Court, then she was turned down again in the Eastern District Court, and they again don't like to slap each other's wrists. It's interesting that the judge in the Eastern District Court was another Sacramento judge, which is a federal judge, but both in Sacramento County, who hangs around with the DAs, and all the people on the prosecutorial side, be it federal or state in Sacramento, know each other. And it's not necessarily in their best service to slap the wrist or overturn the convictions of the other one. It's extraordinarily hard to get convictions overturned in this country. I mean, if you read about what's going on, there are prosecutors all around the country, even after seeing DNA evidence, say they're still guilty. But the DNA evidence says it can't be him. Well, I know they're still guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a strange system that doesn't, you know, that doesn't necessarily work.
Well, again, I'd say working is a, remains to be defined, because for this system, it seems to be working like crazy.
Yeah, you know, incarcerating mostly people of color,
mm-hmm.
Okay, mostly poor, and sadly enough, mostly people who have drug addiction problems who should get treatment rather than incarceration.
Exactly. And Sandra, we're just about out of time, but I want to remind listeners again, the book is Full Circle, A True Story of Murder, Lies, and Vindication, and it's by Sandra Coburn and Gloria Killian, who was given a 32-to-life sentence for something she absolutely did not do. And she spent, what, 17 or 18 years in jail, Sandra?
17 and a half years.
Yeah, and she's out now doing what?
Now she's great. Now it's great. Now she has a committee, an organization called the Action Committee for Women in Prison. And what she does is an advocate for the problems that women have in prison. She's an advocate for wrongful convictions, and she's an advocate for the death penalty. to stop the death penalty.
All right, Sandra, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate it.
Sure. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. All right, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Sandra Coburn, the co-author with Gloria Killian of the book Full Circle, A True Story of Murder, Lies, and Vindication. And this is a story of Gloria Killian being framed for a murder that she did not commit and ending up serving. She got a 32-to-life sentence and ended up serving 18 years of that, even though the judges in the courts all knew that she was innocent. All right, that brings another edition of the show to a close. I want to thank all of my guests today, Dr. Don Lincoln and Sandra Coburn. And I want to thank my board op for today, Teddy Robinson, my production assistant, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at michaelslate@redfuture.com. Again, that's michaelslate@redfuture.com. We're going to go out now with a piece from Johnny Cash called 25 Minutes to Go. Talk to you again next week.
Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go. And the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go. Well, they gave me some beans for my last meal with 23 minutes to go. But nobody asked me how I feel. I got 22 minutes to go. Well, I sent for the governor and the whole darn bunch with 21 minutes to go. And I called up the mayor, but he's out to lunch. I got 20 more minutes to go. Then the sheriff said, boy, I'm gonna watch you die with 19 minutes to go. So I laughed in his face and I spit in his eye with 18 minutes to go. Now here comes a preacher for to save my soul with 13 minutes to go. And he's talking about burning, but I'm so cold. 12 more minutes to go. Well, they're testing the trap and it chills my spine. 11 more minutes to go. And the trap and the rope, all they work just fine.